Hey, this is The Real Brian, a.k.a. The Shadow, former voice and co-founder of The Underground, and you are listening to Central City Underground.
Hey, what is going on, Central City Underground? It is I, the Professor, Chris. Here we are talking about The Flash on the CW. This is episode 129 of Central City Underground, and today I'm going to be sharing feedback from the last episode, which was season 5, episode 19, Snowpack. Story's voice is not with me for this episode, but I want to focus on your feedback because, by golly, we got a lot of feedback. So, great job, Undergrounders. So first, let me give my rating for the episode. Now, please realize, if you listen to episode 128, where Story's voice and I talked about episode 18, Godspeed, we were, gosh, if I was a single professor, I might date the Godspeed episode. It was that good. But this is episode 19, Snowpack. And for me personally, the episode was a bit of a letdown from Godspeed. So my rating was 7 out of 10 melted Frosties. What was your rating? Really? Okay. Hey, it's your rating. Let's get into the synopsis for this episode. When Icicle returns to enact the next phase of his devious plan, Caitlin and her mother, Dr. Carla Tannhauser, must resolve their long combative relationship to defeat the icy monster. After Barry makes a decision about their family without consulting her, Iris decides to take matters into her own hands. So this episode of The Flash was basically all about family, between Caitlin's uniquely frosty brand of family drama and the fallout from Barry's unilateral decision to just leave Nora in the future after her team up with Eobard Thawne. As it turns out, the fallout of that decision will be felt most strongly in next week's episode, and we'll see the return of a handful of villains potentially spelling serious trouble for Team Flash. But first, what are the plot points and themes from episode 19? So we have the big Iris and Barry fight. We have Iris going back to the future with Ralph, which is pretty interesting. We have the return of Icicle. And out of seemingly nowhere, we have Cicada just popping up at the end of the episode. But that was all topped by, in the final moments, we get the return of Nora, who is able to now access the negative speed force. And she returns to the present, red eyes and all. Wow. That, it made me go, wow. It made me go, ooh. It made me go, oh. It made me go, uh-oh. So, I'm not really sure what's going to happen. I'm not reading ahead. We're at the point of no return for that for me. So while during the season I'll read and I'll watch things, I like to take it as it comes here in the last few episodes of a season. Got a lot of feedback, as I said. So I'm going to devote the rest of this episode to sharing your feedback. So the first came in from Sci-Fi Gene. Thank you, Sci-Fi Gene, in advance for sharing some feedback. And these are more like at the end of a show where people are giving facts and telling stories, oh, kind of like on a podcast. Sci-Fi Gene played the role of, hey, I listened to the conversation, and basically Sci-Fi Gene fact-checked us. So I must have had a couple of verbal slip-ups in the last episode. So Sci-Fi Gene let us know that Robert Picardo is actually known for his role as the holographic doctor on Star Trek Voyager, not Deep Space Nine. So I must have said Deep Space Nine last episode. Although, thank you, Sci-Fi Gene, he did have some guest appearances on Deep Space Nine. And this one confused me, because I know we mentioned Velocity Nine, but I didn't go back and listen. I'm not sure where I or Jada may have misspoken, but Sci-Fi Gene lets us know that on another side note, Velocity Nine was actually used in Season 2 when Zoom was pretending to be Jay Garrick. So the only thing I'm thinking, without going back and looking at the tape, is that maybe I said the wrong season, but certainly I do know that Velocity 9 played a role in the Zoom J. Garrick Hunter Zolomon storyline. But thank you, Sci-Fi Gene, for sending that in. And please feel free, if anybody picks up a mistake that we make, please point it out to us so we could certainly improve for the future. Next up, we got a late email from Montefescu regarding episode 18. So let's let Monty take us through his feedback for episode 18, Godspeed. So here we go. Hello, CCU podcasters. Tardian Monty here. How did Miss Panabaker do? I have been graced with two great fledgling directors this week. And he watched this week's episode late. Kristen Windel was the one on Arrow in Lost Canary, and our Killer Frost was the second one for this episode. Of course, Panabaker's task is lightened by the good shooting script and a cast who are over-the-top good this episode. His notes on production values, writing, and directing. Miss Panabaker tries nothing too fancy. She relies on standard CGI set pieces from the Kevorkian Library for the speedster sets. Godspeed is the script checkoff, and she sticks firmly to keeping the script-mandated goofball threat in that script straitjacket. If Panabaker does go off-script, as is her auteur right, it is minimalist, with flourishes of music to scene, some subtle edit cuts, with a few camera tricks to emphasize a point-of-view character shift. An example is the way Eobard Thawne, evil guy played to perfection by Tom Cavanaugh, is given the sympathy send-off this episode. No matter. If the fiend is the evil one in the yellow flash suit, the touches with the sadistic warden and the desperate Nora played scene on scene, point counterpoint, make the empathy meter spike. One wants to stick the warden in that cell with Eobard and have them both exit wormhole forever, stage left. How much of that writing is about 50%, but Miss Panabaker has to juice the timing and the camera shots she selects to hit the emotional register at the right time beats? How hard is it to do with a first-time-out director? See how the veteran director screwed it all up in Spartan on Arrow, and compare this episode to his less-than-stellar work. Production values for Flash are on autopilot, so that is a 5.0. All Miss Panabaker needs is not get in the way of the production crew too much, and be clear and simple as to what she wants to happen in each scene. This is rolling off a log for her, apparently. On to acting. Love the entire cast work. But can I mention four standouts? Tom Cavanaugh, as usual, plays villain Sherlock with the correct aggrievement. His treatment of Eobard as Serpent Dad to Little Runner this season has been layered performance that has sold excess as a Little Orphan Annie type as much as Miss Kennedy has. She is the other half of the yin-yang rotator performance. She manages to pace Cavanaugh in their scenes together and still somehow manages to dial it back in the ensemble scenes so she does not camera hog the episode when we need that ensemble to balance her isolation work. The writers hand Grant Gustin the idiot ball this episode, and he sells it as believable. That is a good actor. Candace Patton has a ridiculous wig as Elder Iris, and she sells it, as well as her usual quote-unquote villain mom role in the script. Trivia. It's gonna be hard to top this one. Monty rated episode 18 a 5, 10, and a 5 out of 5, 5, 5. So I think that comes out to be more than 10 out of 10 on our regular rating scale. So Monty, like Story's voice and I, enjoyed episode 18. Now let's bring it back to episode 19. Where Monty watched the episode on time, and here is Montefescu's email on episode 19. Hello, CCU gang. Shiver me timbers. Monty here. It's time for Snowpack. If you have ever been hit with a Geoff Johns baseball bat story, refer to his Stargirl run at DC Comics, then you understand his kind of wham episode. After being bludgeoned with family values and villain redemption, two famous or infamous Johns themes, this guy has something to write about what works and does not work when one fixates on those two themes to the exclusion of all else ongoing. Production values, writing, and direction. Jonathan Butler and Gabriel Garza dutifully
turned in their Jeff Johns or Stas script, and then the hapless director, Jeff Cassidy, had to juggle idiot balls and try to visually tell a story. Shrug. When we left Barry, the character, the last time, I commented on how well Grant Gustin, as the Flash actor, handled the idiot ball he had been handed in Godspeed and sold it. That he would cut Nora no slack and, in effect, abandon her was a hard sell. Yet he managed. Given his own foul-ups in recent past of screwing up, Flashpoint, and how he quote-unquote feels about abandonment issues, and Thawne, his idiot ball this time should have been equally manageable. It was not. The opening scene was overwritten and too extreme to sell the point. The director helps not a jot with the clumsy way the Iris/Barry fight is staged. It was expositional, and that may be what kills the scene. Tell never works. When the director dives into the Snow B story, which in this unbalanced script actually becomes the A story, the show becomes a snow job. It is an almost a paint-by-number picture play within a play to show idiot ball hugging Barry where he screws up. You can almost mentally see the writers argue in the bullpen how they are going to John Wayne the Thomas Snow icicle and die him off as an object father of love as a lesson to the Flash. That 2x4 steel beam you feel is called clumsy writing. As for poor Nora, poor kid, she is Eobond and turns evils because of the negative speed force that he teaches her. That is another rotten trait Jeff Johns has that creeps into this episode. Villains never are evil because they make wrong moral choices. Nature accidentally turns them that way. Note how Eobond and Cicada and now Nora are turned by circumstance or forces. By the same circumstances, they should turn good via external stimulus. But witness the John Waning of Thomas Snow. This is called contradiction and is a writing fail. The production values, especially the ice fight, were a 3.0 this episode. Acting? Kennedy, Panabaker, Patton, Kavanaugh, Sawyer, Martin, Carter shined. Gustin slumped and overacted depending on scene. The rest gave decent performances, so the acting holds up. Hopes. Next time, a little more Gates and a lot less Johns. The rating? Acting, directing, writing, 4 out of 5, 2 out of 5, 3 out of 5. Monty, I'm sorry you didn't like this episode as much as I did. Not also like this episode. But thank you for the feedback, as always. Next up, we have an email from Spider-Gwen Loves Miles Morales. And Spider-Gwen goes on to say, the first 4 minutes of Snowpack were the best since season 1. Iris and Barry's back and forth was pretty scathing. No one hurts you like family, and there's no closer family than a spouse. Iris bringing up Flashpoint and Barry leaving her to join the Speed Force proves my favorite adage, quote, you may forgive, but you never forget, end quote. I like that Candace had the opportunity to stretch her acting chops. Her performance equaled Jessica Parker Kennedy's last week. Both gave Grant Gustin a lot of work to do. The final 3 minutes were great as well. Their reconciliation was sweet, serious, with a touch of humor. Iris's declaration that, quote, we are the Flash, was derided online. But Barry is at his best when their lives are intertwined. For a moment, I thought James Olsen and Kara Danvers would be my favorite DC Berlantiverse ship. But a network change led to the end of that couple. West Allen has stood the test of time. Thanks to the Flash writers for bringing the iconic Barry-Iris pairing to live action. We were given a boy that loved a girl that matured into a man that loved a woman. When he got her, he didn't let go. There were no arguments that led to breakups. No racing into an ex's or co-worker's arms. Quote, when we were kids, I loved you before I even knew what the word love meant. And that was something Barry said to Iris. Spider-Gwen goes on to finish by saying, Ezra Miller and Kiersey Clemons have a lot to live up to. Thank you, Spider-Gwen. That was a great email. And you saw the episode a little bit different than I did. I mean, there were parts of the episode that I did enjoy, but I really, after last episode, was looking for a lot more 2049 Reverse Flash after not seeing Icicle for, I think, 10 plus episodes. I mean, again, the writers are going to make this all tie together. Obviously, we get the teaser that, you know, Caitlin's mom is in fact a meta, because we get the zoom in into the vial inside the biohazmat disposal container and it turns white. So I don't know if that's going to manifest itself this season or if that's going to be something that comes back in season 6 or 7, but certainly Caitlin is once again not the only frozen person out there, I guess. And we're going to finish up our feedback and this episode of the podcast with some feedback from Aaron. And Aaron lets us know, so when is Nora's spinoff coming? Because I'm so in for her show. While I enjoy parts of the Future Kids Arrow stuff as a whole, I'm enjoying Nora's storyline more and more each week. I am beyond over Oliver Barry, though he just needs to stop and go back to his old self. Admittedly, I'm not a huge Barry fan, but Oliver him just makes him unwatchable to me. I look forward to your thoughts on Godspeed and Snowpack, especially for the Nora aspects. Well, certainly, Aaron, I hope you listened to the last episode of the podcast, and I didn't like Snowpack as much as I did Godspeed, but hey, that was a really great episode, and sure, there were some plot points move forward, the biggest being that Nora has experienced the negative speed force, and that was a whole different speech that Reverse Flash wound up giving to Nora to try to access the negative speed force. And the unfortunate thing is, we learned a little bit about the negative speed force in that you have to access all, basically it truly is the reverse of who Barry Allen actually is. And Eobard Thawne sort of hints at that when he explains that it's a little bit negative, you know, that he basically had to become everything that's the opposite of the Flash. So everything that's wholesome and good and loving and warm about Barry Allen, that's what the speed force is. The negative speed force, it's everything he's not. So again, the red eyes, that was very powerful. Again, it made me go ooh and oh and uh-oh. And of course, you know, that leads us into next week's episode. But again, here in this episode of the podcast, again, I wish I had Jada here with me to fully discuss everything. But hopefully we'll be teamed up again here in the underground for the next episode of the podcast. In terms of feedback, hope you continue to send in the feedback. We love to get it. I'm glad I got to share and get your voices here underground on this episode of the show. If you want to leave some audio feedback, you can call the Golden Spiral Media feedback line. That's 304-837-2278. When you call and leave that message, just let the machine know which podcast you're leaving some feedback for, and just mention Central City Underground. You can also go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback, and you can leave an email and get to us that way as well. You can also share your thoughts on Twitter, @TheFlashGSM, and we've got a great Facebook community built around you, the Underground. You can get to that by going to facebook.com/groups/TheFlashGSM. One last thing to do, as always, and I don't think I've had to do it this season, but we have to do a little flash forward. So let's take a look ahead to Season 5, Episode 20, titled Gone Rogue. Gone Rogue, coming up on April 30th, 2019. What's the summary? Weather Witch, Queen Bee, and Ragdoll return to Central City. Barry continues to struggle with how he feels about Nora's betrayal. And Cisco makes a bold decision. Can't wait to see you guys on the next episode of Central City Underground. Get the feedback in. Get it in by Wednesday after episode 20 at 6 p.m. Eastern. And we look forward to seeing you on the next one. Tell somebody else about Central City Underground. And if you haven't, please rate and review the podcast. Take care, everybody.